and goes about that way and tries to figure out, okay, what can I do to frustrate this process? He's our adversary. We have to accept his reality. There are those who don't really believe he exists. They don't believe evil exists. They believe that evil really is just somebody's lack of opportunity. If they would have had more of an opportunity in life, then they wouldn't do the things that they have done. We recognize such things. No, they committed an evil deed and ought to be punished for it. But they have trouble with that. So certainly, if you can't accept that there's evil in the world, then you're not going to accept that Satan is behind all of the evil that is in the world and that he's just some kind of mythological character that somebody made up along the way. But that's not true. He is our adversary. We have to know our enemy. Military leaders understand that. And so they will study the tactics of their enemy in great detail to try to see where a weakness might exist that they can exploit in order to win the battle. And we have to do the same thing with Satan. We have to understand his devices. In fact, in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 11, Paul says, we are not ignorant of his devices. And he's not just stating a fact there. He's saying we're not supposed to be ignorant of his devices. Now, interestingly enough, what Paul was trying to get the Corinthians to do, one of the things he's trying to accomplish in the second chapter, is get them to receive back the brother who was guilty of sin, who apparently had corrected his sin, but was not being treated properly by the Corinthians. There were some, apparently, who were just kind of standoffish. They weren't too sure, and I've seen that. I've seen people who have come back to the Lord, and there seems to be sometime a hesitancy on the part of some to accept that as a genuine thing on their account. That's horrible, because it gives, again, an opportunity for Satan to jump in there and say, see, they don't really want you back. And some of them will fall away again. I'm thankful I have not seen that here, but I have seen that in other places and know of situations where that took place. And that ought not be. That is giving in, actually, to one of his devices. Because if you give in to that, then Satan not only regains the sinner who had come back, but now he's gained the person who is not accepting that sinner back. And so he's got two people now who are his victims. He tries to discredit by false accusation. That's one of his tactics. That's what he did in the garden. He accused God of lying. You remember that? When he came and had that conversation with Adam, and Adam correctly said, here's what we were told. We're not supposed to eat of that tree over there. And Satan says, oh, come on. He said, don't you realize what's going on here, Adam? You're not going to die. God knows in the day you eat from it, your eyes will be open and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. He just doesn't want you to have special knowledge, Adam. That's what this is all about. So he was accusing God of something false to Adam. Matthew chapter 11 and verse 19. The servants are accusing there. Matthew 11, verse 19. He does this all the time in different circumstances. He will try to make accusations. He will try to discredit what's going on. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of tax gatherers and sinners, yet wisdom is vindicated by her deeds. Now, he's just talked about John the Baptist ahead of that. Here, John came neither eating nor drinking, and they said, he has a demon. You can't win with these people. No matter which lifestyle they saw, they didn't accept John the Baptist. They're not accepting Jesus Christ either. They're trying to discredit him, put him in a bad light. Why, look at that. He hangs around with tax gatherers. Yeah, oh, that's terrible. But of course, Jesus would tell them on another occasion, Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. When he was in the home of Lazarus, a tax gatherer. He had a reason. He wasn't there congratulating them for any unscrupulous thing they might have done. He was there trying to talk to them and teach them. He will discredit man in God's sight. Remember what he said about Job? When he encountered Job and God says, have you considered my servant Job? And Satan, what did he say, basically? Oh, well, he's only serving you because of how good you've been to him. If you take away what you've given to him, he won't serve you any longer. What a very nice thing to say, was. But Satan's not very nice. He's trying to discredit Job, trying to get God to believe that Job is not genuine. Diotrephes discredited John and his co-workers in 3 John verse 10. He would not receive them, and he would not allow the church to receive them. He was a Diotrephes. He had to run the show. And so he discredited John and discredited others that were faithful. I'd love to know what John said to Diotrephes when they met up with one another. Boy, it'd be something, wouldn't it? I don't think the Apostle John took that sitting down, as the saying goes. But this is one of his devices. He will try to discredit through false statements. And he tries to discredit God's word, because he knows of the power that this word has to change lives. He has to somehow get people to think that that word cannot be relied upon. And so there are always skeptics out there casting doubt upon the word of God, who are always, in some cases, they're caught up in worldly wisdom. Paul encountered that at Corinth. And because of their worldly wisdom and the disagreement that it had with divine wisdom, you can't correlate the two of them. They were rejecting the gospel. The word of the cross is to those who are perishing foolishness, but to us who are being saved, it's the power of God. If they can't find a rational explanation for everything the Bible talks about, then they reject the Bible. Well, the very point of some things is, no, there is no rational explanation for the waters parting and hundreds and thousands of people walking across on dry land. There is no rational explanation of that. That's a miracle. There's no rational explanation for people who are dead coming alive, being raised from the dead. You can't explain that rationally. Those are miracles. And they won't accept them because they can't explain it in rational terms. The truth is really relatively simple. And yet, they would have people to believe that it is so convoluted and so complicated that there's no use for you even trying to understand it. We'll tell you what it means. Oh, yeah. 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3 and 4, he said, I'm afraid lest as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your mind should be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. If one comes and preaches another Jesus, whom we've not preached, or receive a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel which you've not accepted, you bear this beautifully. Now, they're not accepting Paul. That's his point. I come and I'm giving you the truth and you're rejecting me, but these false teachers come along and you just swallow everything they're saying. He's not praising them. He's warning them. They've been led away from the simplicity of the truth. And you take most false doctrines, it's unbelievable how convoluted things get. And you compare that to the simplicity of the gospel and say, well, how do people believe that stuff? Jane and I studied for several months, this was over in Joliet, Illinois, with a couple ladies who were Moonies. They don't like to be called that, but that's to identify them for you. We're going to talk about Genesis, the creation. So I said, well, I'll tell you what, you go first. I'll listen. I never heard such a convoluted tale. It doesn't touch top, side, nor bottom of what was in the early chapters of Genesis. I don't know where they got that stuff. They didn't get it out of there, though. And I politely told her when we got done, I said, I don't know where you're getting that, but that's not the way it reads in this copy I'm looking at. Unbelievable stuff that people are willing to believe, and they're moved away from the simplicity of the truth, because the truth is discredited by Satan. But he does another thing, and we talked a little bit about this one. He seeks to distract us. He knows that our focus is on a goal. And so what he does, he puts thorns in the way. Remember the parable of the sower? Some fell among thorns. Well, what are those thorns? The cares of this life. So Satan lines up these things out there in our life that would take our mind away from what the goal is. And he exploits them. He gets us to try to forget what our real mission is. He wants us to forget about our true citizenship. While we're busy with the things of this world and maintaining a proper relationship, as we ought to, with those around us, he gets us to take our focus off of what the real goal is. Set your mind on things above, not on things that are on earth. What a tall order that is, because we're so easily distracted. And Satan's behind that. He wants us to be distracted. He wants our minds to be carried away on other things, to get involved in worldly things. John warns us about that. Love not the world, he said. Neither the things that are in the world, in 1 John 2:15-17. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life, it's not of the Father, but it's of the world. And the world passes away, and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. One is eternal, the other one is temporal. The things of this world are temporal. They're not going to last very long. No matter how long you live, it's really a small length of time compared to eternity. And Satan wants us to focus on the here and now instead of our real goal. Distraction. He'll try to focus, get us to focus on being religious, but not necessarily righteous. We got a lot of religious people in the world. Now, that's evidenced by all the churches that'll have somebody in them today, probably. And some of them may have very big crowds in them, for that matter. But for some of them, they're religious, but they're not righteous. The Jews of Jesus' day, they wanted to be religious. They wanted to be seen as religious. And so they did all kinds of things in order to give the appearance that they were really pious people. But the truth of the matter is, they weren't. They weren't righteous at all, and they crucified the Lord. Not righteous. We cannot please God when we get distracted and caught up in the things of this world. It makes it impossible for us to please God. He also seeks to divide us. Now, this was true in the New Testament. Seeks to divide us. Seeks to take the unity which he prayed for in John chapter 17. Remember when he's praying to his Father? And he says, I want them to be one, even as you and I, Father, are one, that the world may believe that you've sent me. There was a reason behind, expressed there, for that unity. It would help produce faith. What has Satan been able to accomplish? Division. In the religious world, and sometimes even division among those that are Christians. And it happened in New Testament time. You had Corinth. You had a man there guilty of such a sin in some relationship with his father's wife. We can't really tell for sure what it was, but we know it was sinful. It was wrong. He hadn't yet ceased the practice of it, whatever it was. And more than that, they had not taken the steps that a church was supposed to take in dealing with someone in that situation. They were supposed to withdraw themselves from it. They hadn't done that yet. He was still about coming about among them freely, apparently. Nothing had been done about his condition. And Paul rebuked him for it and told him they needed to withdraw themselves from such a brother. Well, that was going to, of course, cause problems. It always does, seems like, when division, when discipline is administered. Seems like there's always some that's, well, I don't go along with that. I don't like that. I don't think this, that, or the other. And so sometimes there will be internal strife, envy, jealousy. They had some of that going on at Corinth too. They were bragging about who baptized them as if that made a big difference and claimed loyalty to a man instead of to Christ. That's why Paul downplayed the number of people that he had actually baptized there. He didn't want people following after him. He did baptize a few, he finally said, but that wasn't his goal. His goal was to preach the gospel, not just to baptize people. We get divided sometimes by false teaching. How does this false teaching get in? Out in the open in a Bible class? Usually not. Once in a while. It happens that way. We had a brother up there at Crestwood. Just come right out with it in a Wednesday night Bible class that he believed it was okay to drink as long as you didn't get drunk. I'd known him for over 20 years probably. Couldn't believe he said that. And we had quite an ordeal over that. But most of the time, it doesn't come out that way. Most of the time, it enters in among us privately. That's why I'm always concerned about when someone tries to defend a fellow who's teaching something false And their defense is something like, well, he doesn't teach it publicly. Well, if he doesn't teach it publicly, what's left? Privately. We're better off if he'll teach it publicly, where it can be identified and discussed. But Paul warned the elders of the church at Ephesus when he called them to Miletus and talked to them that there were going to be some trouble arising. There were going to be some men that were going to come along and exploit the church. And guess what? They're not going to come into the pulpit. They're going to come in privately. Men are going to enter in privately. Be on guard for yourselves, for all the flock, among which the Holy Spirit made you overseers. Shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood. I know that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And, yeah, there are going to be some trouble from the outside, but y'all look at that. And from among your own selves men will arise, speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after them. Yes, even among the eldership, apparently, Paul is saying, watch out. Watch out. But it's going to enter in this case, privately. There are always those who are enamored with men for one reason or another, and whose loyalty then becomes not to Jesus Christ, but to a man. And Paul warned the Corinthians about that. He said in chapter 1, 1 Corinthians, verse 10, I exhort you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all agree, be no divisions among you, but you be made complete in the same mind and in the same judgment. And then he proceeded to talk about the division that took place in Corinth. Not that they had split into a number of churches. They were still gathering together and still meeting as one church, apparently, but they were divided nonetheless. What was the problem? Well, he finally gets around to identifying it for sure in chapter 4, verse 6. These things, brethren, I have figuratively applied to myself and Apollos for your sakes, that in us you might learn not to exceed what is written, in order that you might not become arrogant in behalf of one against the other. See what that led to? Well, I was baptized by Peter. Well, so what? I was baptized by Paul. It didn't matter. Quit stirring up this trouble and this discord and strife over things like that. Don't think of men above what is written. And yet, that still goes on today, doesn't it? Some men are untouchable among brethren because of their great contributions during their lifetime, and I understand that. But no man is above being questioned about what he believes. And no man should be above being asked to defend what he believes. But we go through it from time to time. When it finally comes out that somebody has been teaching something that's not true. One time, several years ago, Brother Homer Haley's doctrine became out there more publicly. If you're not familiar with that, basically Brother Haley believed that baptism before you became a Christian, or marriage rather, before you became a Christian, and divorce didn't matter. Unfortunately, he taught that. Well, when that began to be reviewed by other preachers, the criticism was raised on the part of some of them, well, you're just a bunch of young whippersnappers. Look how valuable Brother Haley has been all these years. That's scary. Is he untouchable because of the number of years he preached? Not supposed to be. What did they do to the Apostle Paul? I think they examined what he was teaching, didn't they, in Acts chapter 17? They were more noble than those in Thessalonica. They searched the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. You mean they checked up on an apostle? Yes. Yes, they did. Must not be wrong to check up on a gospel preacher then if you can check up on an apostle. Satan also will seek to discourage us. Really, you know, this is one of the most effective tools he's got. It's so easy to be discouraged. It worked on Israel. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 this time, verse 10, nor grumble, as some of them did, talking about Israelites in the Old Testament, and were destroyed by the destroyer. They got discouraged and started grumbling. You remember the grumblings from your study of the Old Testament. Well, we don't have anything to eat, so they got manna. I'm tired of manna. We need some meat. They weren't happy at anything. They just complain. Some of it was born out of discouragement, no doubt. Then we get discouraged by the personal sins in our own life or maybe in somebody else's life, and it just kind of drags us down. Satan wants us to be aware of that. We get discouraged by the lack of results sometime. We teach, and we get discouraged because we don't see some visible result. Some results are invisible from the standpoint of numbers. But rest assured, when the gospel is preached, it's doing some good one way or the other. But he'll try to discourage us. But what did Paul say? We got to feed him. Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. It may seem like that we're not making any progress, but we are whenever we teach the truth. He said to the Galatians in chapter 6, verse 9, let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we shall reap if we do not grow weary. Oh, it's easy to grow weary, isn't it? Philippians 3, verse 14, Paul said, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. So we must not allow Satan, in his effort to stop our efforts, to discourage us to the point where we become like Elijah, who went into the cave. They're after me. God says, I've got 7,000 Elijah that haven't bowed the knee to Baal. And I've got some stuff for you to do. So get out of the cave. In essence, is what God told him. Get out of the cave. I got work for you to do. You don't have time to sit around in there feeling sorry for yourself. And so often that's what we do. And another thing that Satan will do, he'll try to delay us. You see, Satan knows that time is on his side, not on our side. It's on his side. He knows what's going to happen to him. So what he wants to try to do between now and then is bring as many people down as he can. They can spend eternity where he is, prepared for the devil and his angels. Just think about it, is what he'll tell some people. You know, don't act right now. You know, just kind of think about it. Acts 24, verse 25. Remember that? Felix? What's old Felix going to do about it? Paul came in, discussed righteousness, self-control, and judgment to come. Why did Paul pick those topics, by the way? You ever think about that? Why did he choose those three things? Because Felix was in an adulterous relationship, that's why. He obviously manifested no self-control. He wasn't exhibiting righteousness, and he needed to know there was a judgment day coming. But what did Felix do? He said, go away for the present. When I find time, I will summon you. He kind of got shook up a little bit by it, but he didn't do anything. I'll think about it, Paul. Now, he was hoping, of course, to someday get a bribe from Paul. That's involved in it, too, verse 26. But I'll think about it. That's not good enough. Oh, it's good enough for Satan. He likes to hear that. I'll think about it. Or in chapter 26, Agrippa, again, a man being taught the gospel. What does he say? Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. Almost. Not quite. Not really ready to do it. Almost. In a short time, you'll persuade me to become a Christian. Agrippa knew. Paul says, I know that you know, Agrippa. These things were not done in a quarter. Agrippa's problem was not a lack of knowledge. It was a lack of determination. And so he's going to delay his decision. Satan loved it. Satan rejoiced over that encounter with Paul and Agrippa. Paul didn't. Satan did. He knew time's on his side. Time is of no concern to him. Now, it better be to us. We looked at James 4, verse 14. What is your life? It is but a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. We don't have an unlimited amount of time. We do not know when the last day on our earth, on this earth, will be. But it will be our last day sometime. We don't know when. We have to be prepared. We can't delay. Paul said to the Corinthians, today is the day of salvation. you need to act today with whatever your situation is with regard to God and obedience to the gospel. Today is the day you need to take care of it. Not tomorrow, not the day after, not next month, not somewhere down the road, but today is the day that you need to react. Obey while we have the opportunity. Ephesians 5, verse 16, Paul said, redeeming the time, for the days are evil. Making the most of your time, the New American Standard says. Don't delay. Delay is no good. Well, we're told to resist the devil. Resist the devil, and he will do what? He'll flee from us. James emphasizes that same thing. We got to be ready to resist Satan, knowing what his tactics are. And these are some of his designs: to discredit, distract, divide, discourage, and delay. These are all things that he uses on us. Now, if we know that, then don't let him do it. Don't give him an opportunity. You mean people do that? Yeah, Paul talked about it. Chapter 4 of Ephesians and verse 27. People give him opportunity. Do not give the devil an opportunity. Paul wouldn't say that if there weren't people doing that. Don't give him the advantage in your life. If you're here and you need to be subject to the gospel invitation, all things are ready. We stand ready to help you become a Christian, as we did earlier. You may have other opportunities, you may not, I don't know. But you have this one. Take advantage of it, please, as we stand and sing together.